Shrink Wrap Radio number 885, Stephen Whiteside, Ph.D., on A Parent's Guide to Treating Childhood Anxiety and OCD.
And now it's time for Dr. Dave and Shrink Wrap Radio.
You're on the couch again with Dr. Dave and Shrink Wrap Radio.
Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make it dangerous. It's all in your head. And now here's your host, Dr. Dave.
My guest today is Stephen Whiteside, Ph.D., who is a professor of psychology in the Mayo Clinic College of Medicine and Science. We're going to be discussing his latest book, which draws on more than two decades of working with childhood anxiety disorders and OCD. Now, here's the interview. Dr. Stephen Whiteside, welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm excited to be here.
Well, I'm excited to have you. We've just been chatting a little bit, and I learned that you are in Minnesota where it's snowing, and I'm here in Northern California where it doesn't snow in Sonoma County except in very rare times. And we're going to be discussing your latest book, A Parent's Guide to Treating Childhood Anxiety and OCD. So first, tell us a bit about your professional background and how you came to write this book. Yeah. Now, why this book at this particular time?
Yeah, well, so I wrote Anxiety Coach because that is what I do, is work with kids who have childhood anxiety and OCD. So I'm a child psychologist. I work at Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. I've been there since 2001, which was a long time ago now. And have been working to build and develop our pediatric anxiety disorders clinic pretty much all of that time. And so currently we see a lot of local kids from the community, and we do a lot of our work in groups. And then we also have this 5-day intensive treatment program for kids who don't have access to care locally, who can travel to Mayo, and they and their parents stay with us for a week. And we try to compress our treatment down into those 5 days.
Yeah.
And from the beginning, our treatment is, you know, standard evidence-based treatment for anxiety disorders and obsessive compulsive disorders, all based on exposures, helping kids face their fears and build confidence with their own experience. But also, particularly because we had families coming and staying with us for a short week and then going home, we knew that 5 days wasn't enough to fully treat anxiety and OCD. So we wanted to make sure that they could continue doing these treatment exercises after they left. And so we started working with parents, teaching parents to be the coaches. And then we figured if we're doing that for the intensive program, we should do it for the local program. And so we refer to our treatment approach as parent coach exposure therapy. And we've been using it clinically, doing research, and eventually just recently decided we should probably write a book about it to kind of inform as many people as possible about what effective treatment looks like.
So what gave you the courage to turn it over to parents? I mean, you know, you've studied a long time to be an expert, and now it seems like you're in a way giving it away.
Yeah. So I can still remember now. It was sort of a leap to bring those first families into Rochester.
I can imagine. Yeah.
So because, you know, anxiety treatment through exposures is stressful. I mean, it's mostly stressful for kids because they're doing things that make them nervous. It's also stressful for parents to see their kids doing things that are challenging, but it's also stressful for the clinician because you've got to perform and you got to produce something. So the child comes in, you've got about 50 minutes, you've got to set up the exposure, do it, and then have the child be successful, feel better, learn from it, and wrap it up and make a plan for this coming week. And then you add to that, you've got a family coming here for 5 days, and you've really got to be on your A game for that 5 days and make sure that they are successful and find it worthwhile. So there was, so part of it was just part of it was a leap of faith. Part of it was basing it on kind of other research that's been done. One of my mentors, Dr. John Abramowitz, had been doing intensive treatments for adults with OCD. So there's some model that we could base it off of. But we didn't really have any other options in terms of trusting parents with the treatment, because people would come to us because it's hard to find a therapist who does exposure therapy. So we weren't going to have a lot of luck sending them back to their home area to find a therapist, because that's why they came to us in the first place. So we figured parents are the most important people in kids' lives. When kids are anxious, they're going to go to their parents. So let's teach parents how to do this.
Well, when you say you're doing exposure therapy, what form of exposure are you using? Are you talking about in their imagination or actual stimuli of one sort or another?
Yeah. Oh, that's a great question. So we always try to do in vivo exposures or action exposures to doing something live in the child's world, if appropriate and possible. So we spend a lot of, that's another nice thing working with groups. So we see a lot of kids with social anxiety, and if you're nervous about starting conversations or talking in front of a group of kids, it's pretty handy to have a group of kids there to practice with. But
Right.
we leave the room. So if we're working with kids with social anxiety, we'll go down to the stores down in the lobby level of of our building, and they'll go to store, talk to store clerks. Kids with OCD will go around and touch contamination. Kids with separation anxiety will sit in a room by themselves, or go do things that are independent at an age-appropriate level, riding elevators up and down. But when the item that sets off a kid's anxiety are thoughts. So if we're working with intrusive thought OCD, or we have kids, we don't work with post-traumatic stress disorder, but we certainly have kids who have upsetting memories of things that have happened, or kids with general worry. The treatment, an important part of that treatment is imaginal exposures, repeating those worry thoughts over and over again. And then, of course, when we've got kids with panic, or other fears that are set off by bodily feelings, we'll do interoceptive exposures. We'll have them bring on panic feelings through hyperventilation, running up and down stairs, spinning in a chair to learn that those symptoms of anxiety and panic are uncomfortable, but not dangerous.
Well, that's quite a creative variety that you're going through there. And it reminds me, I've actually been interviewing some family therapists recently. And so, and you are in fact doing family therapy. And what are, the parents may have issues of their own. I could imagine that there are challenges in working with the parent population.
So, we all have issues as parents. Some of our issues as parents are impact our kids and their anxiety more than others. And so, like most things, anxiety disorders and OCD are inheritable. So kids with anxiety often have parents who are anxious. Sometimes parents are pretty open about the fact that they have untreated or treated anxiety or OCD themselves. And of course, families with kids who have anxiety disorders are just like any other families. They've got stressful things in their lives. They've got disagreements and conflict. They have crises and challenges happen to the families that lead to kind of depression. And so we are sensitive to parents. But kind of our approach has been, one of the kind of probably the main thing is parents own anxiety, and either they respond to that by being very nervous about their child and being hesitant to push their child to face their fears, or they respond to it by, well, I can't let my anxiety get in the way, so I better go full force and make sure I have them face their fears quickly as possible. But so our kind of our assumption has always been parents are going to be there, and the parents are going to have a lot more of impact on their child than we will. So we can't just ignore the parents and their parents' challenges. We need to include parents and be upfront about their anxiety or their challenges and help them address those as we're working with their child. And overall, working, parents, we're having parents around is a huge benefit. I can't imagine working with adults and not having someone to send home with your patient to help them do their therapeutic exercises. Parents are great to work with and a real benefit.
Yeah. You mentioned a kind of a sort of a heritability of the of anxiety, and I'm wondering, I'm sure there's a literature on this. Are we talking about sort of a biologically based, genetically based kind of heritability or modeling or what?
Yeah, probably both. Yeah, and I can't cite the figures for you off the top of my head about how much of anxiety disorders is thought to be genetically based. But it's fair to say that probably the best way to think about it is that parents who are anxious, kids are more likely to have anxiety if their parents have anxiety. That doesn't mean it's 1-to-1, Many kids that we see are very anxious, but their parents are not, and they're like, I have no idea where this came from. And then we've got, anxious parents obviously have kids who are not struggling with anxiety. But oftentimes there's at least some just genetic component to it. And there's nothing we can do about that. We can't go back and change our genes. And then so the second piece that, and this is one of the things that we talk about early in the book. So in Anxiety Coach, the first section is all about helping parents understand anxiety disorders and come and decide whether or not what their child is experiencing is best described as an anxiety disorder. And part of that we describe, I think, in the second chapter, and part of we do this with families in our orientation session, is help them use the avoidance cycle to understand their child's anxiety and OCD. And that gets to kind of what you're mentioning is that one thing that maintains anxiety is that kids avoid situations that make them nervous. So they never have the chance to learn that it's not as threatening as they thought. And also, no one likes to be anxious. So anything that we do to avoid relieves that anxiety, makes us feel better, and makes it more likely we'll do it again. So that kind of avoiding working in the moment makes us more likely to do it and can make anxiety get worse and worse over time. And that's where parents come in. Anything parents do to model being anxious or to overprotect or solve anxiety problems for their kids helps them learn to be anxious and also helps them stay stuck in that avoidance cycle.
How do you keep the focus on the kid, and do you ever do direct interventions with the parents? And if so, is that in the presence of the kids, or do you separate the parents out for private conversations?
Yeah. So the focus on the kids comes pretty naturally. That's what's brought them in to see us. And that's typically the most, that's on the forefront of the parent's mind of what to focus on. And so for the most part, it's pretty easy to stay focused on the child's anxiety. We don't. We've had parents over the years say, you know what, I've learned through this process what I need to do, and I've even started facing my own fear. So some parents kind of learn and generalize it to their own experience, which is always satisfying.
Sure.
But when there are issues that get in the way, and the ones that we address probably the most would be parental conflict. So when parents don't see eye to eye on kind of the presence of an anxiety disorder, the severity, kind of what's the right pace, or just their general conflict gets in the way of their ability to coach their child.
I would imagine that you would get into the blame game would be something that would happen.
Yes,
Where
so that can happen. And there's lots of times disagreement about one parent thinks they should push harder and the other parent thinks that you always push too hard and we should back off a little bit. And both parents usually have some accuracy in what they're saying, but also just general, especially when you have parents who are divorced and are making a heroic effort to be there, despite the animosity between them, they're making a heroic effort to be there civilly working with their child together. Some of that history of acrimony between them can make it difficult for them to be on the same page. And we have those conversations outside the child's presence, helping them parents get on the same page. And then we also refer parents for their own treatment.
Uh-huh. What are some of the diagnostic challenges that you face?
Yeah. When we do an evaluation of kids, our main primary goal is to figure out whether or not we and the family agree that what their child's experiencing is best described as an anxiety disorder. And that's where we start Anxiety Coach's first chapter. What is an anxiety disorder? And our definition for that is basically kids being more nervous, worried, or afraid of something than we would expect them to be based on their abilities. The things that in our clinic, we have a clinic focused solely on anxiety disorders and OCD. And of the kids who come in, about a third of them don't end up having anxiety or OCD. There's some other mental health concern has brought them in. And the main ones are general like lack of cooperation, kind of anger outbursts being, challenging. Sometimes that gets phrased. Sometimes kids express that desire not to do something as being upset rather than angry, and that gets labeled as anxiety. Sometimes kids are nervous about they're worried they're going to get in trouble, or they're worried about school, or they're worried they're going to lose their iPad because they broke a rule, or because they're worried about school because they're behind on their grades. In that first example, kind of that anxiety about I'm worried I'm gonna lose my iPad is the problem is not the anxiety. The problem is the rule that they broke that got them into that situation. So one is emotional outbursts in general rather than anxiety in particular. And then the second is situational stress. So if a child is nervous about school, they're afraid they're going to fail, and that's because they're doing poorly, or they're nervous about going to school because they're being bullied. So they're afraid to talk to people because they're being bullied, or they're nervous about their parents divorcing because their parents are yelling and screaming at each other. In those situations, kids are definitely anxious, worried, and nervous, but it's not an anxiety disorder. It's an understandable reaction to stress. And so that's one of the main things we want to tease apart is this child more nervous than we would expect because life is going pretty smoothly, but yet they're afraid they're going to make mistakes or not do well, even though they're doing fine, versus a child whose life is stressful. Because we don't help people face their fears of getting beat up by bullies or being mistreated or face their fears of failing by failing school. Those are problems we want to fix rather than use exposure therapy for. So that's the main diagnostic challenge is this an anxiety disorder or is this a stressful situation or another emotion driving the behavior?
Well, you talk about anxiety disorders and OCD. And so what's the kind of, it sounds like there could be a little confusion there. Why do we need to tack on OCD?
Yeah. So that's great. So our first challenge is this an anxiety disorder? And I guess I'm a little bit old school. I still consider we lump OCD in with the anxiety disorders OCD used to be part of the anxiety disorders in the old version of the diagnostic system. And it no longer is. But we treat it with exposure, so we can continue to include it. So the first step is this an anxiety disorder? And then the second step is which one? So which diagnosis are we going to put on this? And this is probably the third chapter in Anxiety Coach is walking parents through the different diagnoses. And so the most common diagnoses that we treat in our program are generalized anxiety disorder, kids just worrying all the time, social phobia, kids being very nervous about making mistakes and being judged, separation anxiety, being very nervous about being separated and doing things without parents or going to school or staying home alone. Then also there's panic disorder and specific phobias. And then there's obsessive compulsive disorder, which often includes fear and worry. So a prototypical example of OCD is I'm afraid if I touch public surfaces, I'll get germs on me and then I will get sick and die. So I feel very nervous when I think I've got germs on me. But sometimes, and probably the reason that OCD was taken out of the anxiety disorders is that sometimes it's not anxiety based. Sometimes it's disgust based. So I don't like touching public surfaces that those other kids have touched. Not because I think I'll get sick. It's just gross, and I have to wash it off because that feeling won't go away unless I wash it off. Sometimes it's just, has no kind of emotion to it at all. It just doesn't feel right. I put the glass down and it just doesn't feel right. I have to pick it up and put it down over and over again until it feels right. And the reason that we lump all the anxiety disorders together and include OCD is that one, they go together a lot. So if you have one anxiety disorder, you probably have another as well. This is how the system, diagnostic system works. The most common comorbid conditions with OCD are anxiety disorders. So it's helpful to give a specific diagnosis so we can focus what we need to do, but they tend to go together. And then probably even more importantly, the treatment is all the same. We need to help kids face their fears, stop avoiding, stop doing rituals, break OCD's rules, and learn through their own experience that they can handle things without the avoidance or the ritual. So the treatment approach is the same for all anxiety disorders and OCD.
What about ADHD? Does that enter into the mix somewhere?
So, that kind of goes back to the, diagnostic questions and challenges. Sometimes we'll have people, kids come to us who the main concern is schoolwork, and they seem to have trouble focusing and paying attention, and then they're getting really nervous and overwhelmed by the schoolwork. And the question is, are they behind because they're having trouble focusing and paying attention, and then that gets overwhelming, or are they really nervous about school and that leads to them having trouble focusing and they feel overwhelmed because they're nervous about doing really well, and then now they're having trouble getting stuff done because they're so anxious. So trying to tease those two things apart can be a diagnostic challenge. And the way we try to approach that is kind of by looking at areas of non-overlap. So my theory is if anxiety, so when we are nervous and worried, when we're struggling with anxiety, it makes it harder to focus and pay attention because our mind is on focused on the fears and the obsessions and the anxiety or OCD, and that can get in the way of schoolwork. But my assumption is if that's what's happening, the anxiety, the worry, the fears should be pretty obvious. It should be pretty clear what they're afraid of. And not always, but there's probably a good chance that we see anxiety, fear, and worry in other situations, not just while they're trying to pay attention to schoolwork. And if we don't see any, if the anxiety only happens after they've fallen behind on their schoolwork or only happens when they have to do schoolwork, and is it really anxiety versus don't really like doing this because it's hard to focus, makes it less likely it's an anxiety disorder. And on the other hand, do we see problems focusing and attention even when they're not anxious? So do they have trouble focusing on quiet activities at home that are a little bit more boring, on chores, things like that, where it's very unlikely that anxiety is getting in the way? So we kind of use those areas of non-overlap to try to make that distinction. Sometimes it's not clear, and we just say, well, I'm not exactly sure if it's anxiety or ADHD, but seems like anxiety is more likely. Let's start treating that and see what happens. And then, so when we have that orientation where we try to place their symptoms into that avoidance cycle, what sets off your anxiety? How do you avoid? And then we try to make a fear ladder, which is the treatment plan for exposures. Here's the different things you're going to do to face your fears. Oftentimes, when it's not really anxiety, it's more ADHD, that process doesn't go smoothly. And it's like, well, we tried anxiety. That doesn't seem to be a good fit. Let's go back to the drawing board and relook at attention problems.
So, what about psychopharmacology? Are those sorts of interventions part of the mix or not?
So we always, so we have a psychiatrist who's part of our clinic. Our general approach is that we should begin with behavior exposure therapy first. And if we are not successful enough, then explore medication management. And we do that for a couple reasons. One, more research needs to be done. There's not enough research in mental health in general, particularly in child mental health. So we don't really have research-based answers to these questions. And the research that is out there is sometimes murky and not all pointing in the right direction. But our general reading of the research is, partly from the literature on OCD as well as anxiety is that we think that if we do exposure therapy well, that is all kids need to be successful, and adding medication probably is not going to add on to that. Also, once you start a medication for anxiety, you're probably going to take it for a long time. We did some research looking at kids in our system who had been first diagnosed with an anxiety disorder and prescribed medication, and then followed up 5 years later, and about 75% of them were still taking a medication for anxiety, or at least a psychiatric medication. So once you start, it's not clear when you're going to stop. And if you look at adults, many adults who are taking psychotropic medications have been taking them for 10, 20 years. So the idea that kids will take a medicine for anxiety disorders for a short period and then stop is probably not the way that it works. And when there is research about what happens when you stop taking a medication, symptoms usually come back. So ideally, we would like to treat anxiety with behavior therapy and so that they don't have to begin a medication. But sometimes anxiety is more severe or more retractable. And then we send them to our psychiatrist to discuss medication options. And I should also say, many, at least 30% of the patients who come in to see us are already on medication.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's not surprising. I know there's been a hot issue in social discussions, you know, online discussions and so on. Yeah. And as you point out, it's still an open question. The value of medications, how they work, et cetera, and what the side effects and byproducts are of being on, particularly for a long period in one's life, being on these medications.
Yeah.
One of the things you write about in the book are three types of thoughts that set off anxiety or OCD. What are those three kinds of thoughts?
So are you referring to the three types of situations that set off anxiety and OCD, or the thoughts in particular?
Well, let's talk about both.
Okay. So first, it goes back to that avoidance cycle that we talked about early in the book, with the idea of understanding the child's anxiety or OCD in a way that sets us up for treatment. And so the avoidance cycle starts with what sets off your anxiety. And so your anxiety can be set off by things out there in the world around you. So you see a dog, makes you anxious. You have to talk in front of people, touching germs, things being out of order, having to do things without your parents. There's an activity that you do that makes you scared. Other times, though, your anxiety gets set off by thoughts in your head. So you're not particularly doing anything anxious. You're sitting at home, but you're thinking about things that make you nervous. And there are kind of three different types of thoughts that can set off anxiety. One is worries about the future, sitting at home and I'm thinking, well, what's going to happen when I graduate? Am I going to be able to go to college? Am I going to be successful? And it's those thoughts about the future set off my anxiety. Sometimes it's memories of the past, like embarrassing or upsetting situation, social situation or a traumatic incident that happens, that those thoughts set off your anxiety. And other times it's strange OCD thoughts popping into your head about you could hurt someone or you could do this or that or the other thing. And that thought itself makes you anxious. And then finally, sometimes anxiety is set off not by a situation, not by thoughts, but by feelings in our body. That's what, particularly with panic attacks. So heart pounding or feeling upset to our stomach or dizzy. And it's those physical feelings that set off our anxiety because we're afraid we're going to have a panic attack and lose control. Or we're afraid that a stomach ache or dizziness means that we're going to throw up. Or we're afraid that skip in our heartbeat means that we're going to have a heart attack. So anxiety can be set off by things, situations and activities around us, thoughts in our head or feelings in our body.
You talk about the motivation plan, four strategies to keep kids on track to overcome their fears. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So this is hard. You know, facing your fears is hard work for anybody, especially for, you know, younger kids who the idea that, you know, if I do this hard work now, then sometime in the distant future, I'm going to feel better is challenging and shouldn't pick on young kids. It's challenging for all of us, young kids, teenagers, adults. And so there are four things that parents and kids, you know, particularly parents, can do to help kids stay motivated Because exposure therapy, you have to stick with individual exposures until your anxiety comes down. You have to repeat exposures over and over again. You have to take one success and then build onto the next success. So it's a lot of hard work and patience. So the four things parents can do to help kids be successful are: one, take small steps. We don't want parents to get overly excited and say, all right, I get it. My child needs to face their fears. They're afraid of dogs. Let's go to the dog park. Let's throw him in and he can come out when he's not afraid of dogs anymore. That's not going to go well. Kids are going to feel overwhelmed. They're going to get angry, fight back, be resistant. So parents and kids working together to take small steps, to decide together what is the next exposure task to do, helps kids stay motivated, stay on track. The second thing that parents can do is use their attention as motivation. When any of us feel anxious, we want help. We want somebody to help us feel better. We want somebody to fix the situation that's making us feel uncomfortable. And when you're a child or a teenager, the person you usually look towards is your parents. So parents fixing things when kids feel anxious is normal. We love it as parents. We love to help our kids. Especially as they get older, those few times that we can solve things is a wonderful experience. And there's nothing wrong with that. But when kids are in an avoidance cycle, they have an anxiety disorder, when what sets off their anxiety is safe and something they should be able to handle on their own, anything that we do to help calm our child or help them avoid things becomes part of that problem. And so what we have to do as parents is start giving lots of warmth and attention and support when kids are trying to face their fears. But when kids are letting their anxiety get the best of them, getting angry, getting overly upset, avoiding, we need to take our attention away, let the child calm down by themselves, and then come back in and help them take the next step to face their fears when they're willing to work with us. The third thing parents can do is just goal setting and rewards. The idea that I'll feel better in a couple of months if I work hard today is not very rewarding. So just, setting a smart goal. We're going to do 5 exposures or 10 exposures. And after we've checked off those exposures, we're going to do something fun to celebrate. And then finally, consequences. If parents say you got to do this exposure and kids get upset and parents ignore them and walk away, that and the child starts playing video games, that exposure is never going to get done. So just like homework, you can't go out and play and do fun stuff till you have your schoolwork done. Same thing with exposures. You can't do fun stuff till the exposure is done. And it's not a punishment. We're not going to take away your electronics forever or for 2 days or for a week. You can't do those fun things until the exposure is done. And then once the exposure is done, you get your stuff back and we move forward. So those are the four things that parents can do to help their kids stay motivated through the challenging process of facing their fears.
It's interesting that you mentioned electronics and things like video games and so on, video games, cell phones, which, there's a lot of controversy and discussion about that right now. And the other thing that there's a movement towards, is to do therapy electronically. Are there any games or technology assistance that you're aware of that seem promising?
Technology, you can't get away from technology.
No.
Whether technology is causing all the problems or it's our, the solution for the problems, one way or the other, you can't get away from technology. So in terms of the effects of kind of technology, I think that the best answer is we don't know yet, but it seems like technology, social media, can be particularly harmful for kids who are already at risk. So already feeling depressed, already anxious, already having concerns about body image. Technology can really, social media, can exacerbate those problems and make them worse. What I think parents should take away is just keep in mind that even though technology has permeated our lives, and kids get very upset when they lose access to it, it is still kind of our role as parents to help shape them and help shape their daily experience for the better. And limiting technology use is probably a good thing to do. Limiting technology is more than probably. It's likely that that's good to do. If you're on technology, you're probably not running around. You're probably not interacting with people in real life, and you're probably doing something that gets you all revved up in terms of being just kind of wanting to do the next level, wanting to do the next thing. And it just probably leaves you in a place that you're not feeling as good as if you were back in the 70s running outside with your friends. So limiting technology, you can't get rid of it, but limiting technology use is a good role for parents. In terms of can technology help with treatment, and the answer is it's got to be yes. It seems quaint to say, but there was a time when people were doing a lot of research on whether or not you could do therapy in person versus, via teleconference. But now that since the pandemic, our entire lives feel like they're teleconferences sometimes, it seems pretty right. clear that you can successfully do treatment via video, via Zoom. And that's important because some people can't go to a therapist. There's not a therapist who specializes in exposure within an hour's drive, if not 2 hours drive, and you're not going to drive 4 hours total for an hour appointment. So being able to have access to a therapist via video really opens, expands the number of people who can get good quality care. And sometimes it's better, if the thing that makes you nervous is the contaminated couch in your house, and that's because that's where your brother threw up, and no other thing is it's contaminated with that, doing a therapy session where you're in your own house touching your own couch can be a much realer exposure than having to come into the office where the contamination isn't. In terms of are there apps, there are so probably what parents best to keep in mind is there are so many apps and programs out there for anxiety and mental health issues. The vast, vast majority of them are not based on evidence and are not providing the treatment recommendations and treatment tools that kids need to be successful.
Another topic that you take on, which is not an easy one, is diet and weight control, eating issues, which is a whole category in itself.
Yeah. So that, in the section of one of the last sections of the last chapter of the first section is, now that we understand what an anxiety disorder is, what is not an anxiety disorder? What are the things that sometimes look like anxiety disorders, or the things that exist with anxiety disorders but need to be treated first? An example is anger outbursts. When kids are anxious, they often get angry because that's what we do, fight or flight. We lash out. We want to protect ourselves, don't want to do the things that make us anxious. And so that's part of parcel, and that's we address that with the motivation plan. But if kids are just not cooperative with daily doing chores and picking up after themselves and clearing the table, and it's a real struggle to get them to do that, they're probably not going to be very cooperative exposure. So we have to treat that cooperation first. Eating issues is another example of if kids have started restricting their diet to the point that they have lost weight and they've sort of fallen off their growth curve. So whether they were normally at the 25th percentile or 50th or 75th, doesn't matter what was normal for them. But if they are now, their weight is low for where it should be historically for them, that often affects them. So not eating enough, having low body weight for your natural body tends to leave kids being more physically uncomfortable. So sometimes families will come in and kids just describe feeling anxious at school. They're not worried about anything. They're not having panic attacks. They just don't feel good. They feel lightheaded. They feel dizzy, kind of nauseous. And after some exploration, we see that they've lost a significant amount of weight and they're not eating breakfast and they're not eating lunch. And so it's probably physical feelings of being undernourished that are being described as anxiety. Other kids can also be more emotionally reactive, that things that may not have upset them at all or might have upset them, but they could handle it now, just kind of reduce them to tears immediately. When kids are undernourished, they tend to be more rigid. It's harder for them to change their perspective and learn from their experience. And so when that's present, one, it can look like an anxiety disorder. And so treating anxiety would not be appropriate because it's actually an eating or nutrition issue, weight issue. And sometimes they're both. I mean, sometimes kids have backed themselves into not eating because they're afraid of choking or they're afraid of contamination, and that's interfered with eating. But we can't successfully do exposures because they can't manage their emotions and they're not flexible in their thinking to learn from the exposures because of being underweight. And being underweight and not eating is a more pressing problem than being nervous and worried or OCD typically. And so what we need to do is focus on increasing their caloric intake, returning their weight to where it was, and then hopefully most of the anxiety and OCD just goes away because it was related to eating. And if not, and if it was there beforehand and is still present, then we turn to treating it with exposure therapy.
Okay. I don't think we've mentioned the title of the book, and I don't think it's quite out yet. I'll let you tell us the title of the book, and
Yeah.
yeah.
So it's Anxiety Coach, a parent's guide to treating childhood anxiety and OCD. It's as we've been talking, there's three sections. The first section is helping parents understand what an anxiety disorder is and try to decide whether or not that best describes their child's experience. Second section is introducing parents to exposure therapy. So starting very broad, this is the history and research and theory behind, and then kind of getting more specific, describing the different types of thought exposures, action exposures, and then going through very specifically here are the steps for how we set up, do, and learn from exposures. Here's sort of a timeline and some milestones of that you're on the right track or things are not going the right direction. And then the third section has a chapter for each of the anxiety disorders and OCD where we try to put it all together and kind of as a reference, you single reference, parents can go to that chapter and make sure that social anxiety or OCD best describes their experience and kind of go through more specific details how to implement an exposure plan for their child. The goal, there are really two goals from the book. The first is hopefully for many families who are dealing with more mild anxiety or OCD, this is sufficient to get them going in the right direction and to address it and hopefully prevent more severe problems occurring. But it would be naive and irresponsible to suggest that just reading a book is enough to fully treat anxiety and OCD when they're full blown. So the second goal is, as we've mentioned a few times, it's hard to find an exposure therapist. So the goal is to educate families on what the most effective treatment is for anxiety and OCD so that when they are searching for a therapist, they know what to look for. And if the therapist is not doing exposure therapy, families are educated enough that they need to ask for that or find another therapist. And the book will be released April 16th of this year, 2024.
It's coming up soon, folks. So keep your eyes out at your bookstore. So it sounds to me like this will be very useful to many parents and people out there. So if there's nothing else that we need to get in here, I'll let you go. Is there
All right.
anything else you need to
Oh, no,
mention?
I think that's it. I'm really appreciative of you allowing me to come on your long-standing, long-running show. It's a real honor and privilege. Thank you.
Well, Dr. Stephen Whiteside, I want to thank you for being my guest today on Shrink Wrap Radio. My recent guest, Dr. Michael Whiteside, PhD, is a clinical child psychologist at the Mayo Clinic in Minnesota, and he's written a new book, A Parent's Guide to Treating Childhood Anxiety and OCD, based on his many years of experience working with children and families suffering from anxiety and OCD. I previewed this book prior to my interview with Dr. Whiteside and defined him and it to be very authoritative. Parents with anxious kids will find it to be a valuable resource, and I have no hesitation in recommending the book, which will come out later this year in April.
Hi, Dr. Dave. This is just to let you know that I really appreciate your show, Across the Ocean, here in the Netherlands. I've expressed that by a small donation. With regard to the work you put into your shows, it's just a small amount. but it's another way to say I value what you do. I'll keep listening with heart and mind.
Thank you, Joris, there in the Netherlands. Every little bit helps, and I really appreciate your making the effort to be a contributor. And thank you for your message representing that to other listeners. Time once again to shrink wrap it up. Big thanks to today's guest, Dr. Stephen Whiteside, for telling us about his fascinating work with anxiety sufferers at the Mayo Clinic and his new book for parents. Next week, I'll be speaking with Dr. Matt Gutman about panic attacks. Until then, this is Dr. Dave reminding you to be kind to yourselves, others, and our precious Earth.
You've been shrink-wrapped by Dr. Dave. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make you dangerous.